Hey, thanks for being here tonight. I'm going to try to answer your questions tonight. Basically, I'm going to go through and give you an update on what I have so far. And then we'll talk about some of the things that we want to try to accomplish. Keep in mind that everything right now is in some kind of nebulous form, even though we do have some hardline definite places that we're going to be operating out of. But I want to basically lay out the plan for you tonight. And as any plan, we'll adjust it as we go, but the bulk of this is going to be pretty much right on the money. Now, some of you were asking me, and I did find them, if you want a souvenir John or Romans to take home and, you know, put part of praying over, when you have your prayer time or whatever, help yourself. There's more in my office if you need that. But I will have a time at the end where you can ask me questions, and I'll try to answer them to the best of my ability. I know many of you have taken up the challenge that Joe gave us when he preached that night of reading 10 chapters a day. I think that's a good place to start. And I hope that that'll put you through the Bible three times a year. And that's a great pace, I think, anybody can handle. So I encourage you to keep on doing that. And we'll hear the reports of how you're all doing. Now, as I told you, And I know how these things work because I've been so many of them. I told you out of our Bible conference would actually come some clarity of what God wanted to do with us and how we could do what we want to do. I've geared the messages along those lines to bring us to this point. It's hard to explain to people what God is going to do before he does it. It's like all these people going back, I guess, you know, Sean's kids got to Terre Haute, Indiana last night, which is halfway back to Canton, and got in at 2:00 and then was on the phone for the next 3 hours with their dad, excited about talking about everything that went on here. Can you imagine trying to go back to that church and explain what they went through here? It's impossible. But what that church will see is not what they try to explain it, but the change in their whole life about it. This is why I loaded everybody up out of that bookstore with everything that we had, because I know now it'll go back there and they will do something with it, and it just furthers our ministry of being able to reach out. They will go back there and they will tell everybody what happened here, and I guarantee you we'll be hearing from people in that church. Same thing happened in Boston. I'm not even going to get in Boston tonight, but wait till Sunday and I tell you what's happened up in Boston. But tonight I want to set forth a plan as we move forward. And as I said, we're going to move forward carefully, prayerfully, and as the Bible says, with the word of his patience, or patience of his word. And just like we allowed God to develop everything up to our conference and then the conference, I put no plan together for the conference. I didn't tell these guys what to preach. I didn't even tell them what the conference is about. I never even told them we were putting John's and Romans together, I don't think. I wanted the Holy Spirit of God to work in their lives, to give them, Holy Spirit of God knew what we were doing. I wanted him to be able to work in their lives with what they were going to preach, and he most certainly did. And what I want to do from this point is what, you know, I've done up to this point, and that is allow God to develop what he's given us now, to lay it out and to give us two basically clear open doors. And things may change, it may become more than that, but right now I'm just going to talk to you where we are coming out of this or what God has done. And the first door that God gave us will is going to be, the first door that God gave us obviously is going to be Miles. Miles and his ministry of the seed ministry, I cannot tell you how that was the answer to my prayer of what I needed. I knew what I wanted to do, but I wasn't sure how I was going to get there. And I was missing that piece. And Miles was, for me, was for that missing piece. And, you know, he was the catalyst, my prayer, that really began the taking this church to the next level. I got to spend a lot of time with Miles, and that was my goal. The time, he was only here a short time, and, you know, I wanted to maximize my time. I was up early, went over to the hotel, had coffee and breakfast with him. I spent as much time with him as I could. You know, I wanted him to understand where we were at, but I wanted to understand where he was at. And he understands exactly where we're at. He is the real deal for where we are at as a church and where we want to go. And Miles takes 2 or 3 mission trips down to Central America a year. And we now have been invited to be part of that, whoever, whenever we want to go. And what I wanted Miles to do, and he completely understands this, you know, I wanted Miles to be able to take a group of you down and basically teach you the ropes of New Testament missions dealing with people in Central America. Central America is probably the best place to start. It's where I started. And it's the best place to start because it's very cheap. A trip down there is between $1,200 and $1,500. That's your airfare, that's your food, that's your hotel, that's everything. And a 5-star hotel down there, you can stay in for like $8 or $9 a day. It's very reasonable, and there's a real need. I worked in Central America for years and years and years, and never one time did I ever have anybody refuse a tract that I gave them. People that I was with in the churches I was with, they would ride the bus everywhere. They'd get up and start preaching on the bus. People would listen. They'd pass out tracts wherever you would go. People would accept them. It's really, really, really an open country in terms of the gospel. And so it's really a good place to begin your understanding of missions. And Miles understands what I want him to do. He's going to take you, they go, and he's going to explain and show you how everything operates by what he does and give you hands-on in what you're doing in Central America. Miles basically takes 3 kinds of trips. One of the trips he's taken, and this is where he's going in the next couple of days, is down to a Christian camp. And it's made up of dormitories, and they have camp down there. It's their summertime down there now. It's our wintertime up here. And the men and women stay in different dormitories. And this particular trip, they have plans to work at the camp to get it up to speed for the camping program. They're going to do some work on the roof, they're going to do some work on the camp, and then along with that, they add in all the evangelism they're going to do. And so it's a bridge of both a work time and then an evangelism time. The second trip, that kind of trips that he takes, are basically evangelism trips with other churches. And this is where the people will stay in the hotel that he books and gets all that, and then they work with the churches, passing out whatever they do, Bibles, working with them. There's a Bible Institute down there that some of you will be probably teaching in. You'll be working through translators. I'll get you all ready for that. We'll get to that here in a little bit. The third kind of trips that he takes is, and I told Miles, I don't think we better do this one the first time out. This is where he goes into the deep part of the jungle. And he works there with indigenous tribes, and you stay in tents there. And it's a very primitive type thing. I'm not saying some of you won't get there, but that's not where I want to start you out on the first one. Miles and I talked a lot about the 47,000 Johns and Romans that we did. And sometime around October or November, he's taking a team down to Peru. And they're going to begin to pass out the Johns and the Romans. And he's invited us to go along part on that trip. And this trip, as he explains it, where we actually land in Colombia, and it's a port in Colombia, and I looked on a map up here, it's a point in Colombia that three countries come together very close. We stay in a hotel in Colombia, but a 15-minute walk and you're in the country of Peru. And the pastor down there, all the Johns and Romans will be shipped down to a shipping container and be there. And we'll pick them up, and then we'll work with them from there. And at the same time, that's where the Bible Institute is, and that's where the different churches are. And you need to understand that when you go to one of these countries, you may not speak the language, but you will understand very quickly what the witness of the Spirit is, as the Bible talks about. And they will love you. They will look, embrace you as brothers and sisters in Christ. There's a real, in situations like this, there's a real a love for American Christians that come down. And you'll build some lasting friendships down there that will carry on, you know, long after you come back. And it's a thing where we'll be working down there with stationed out of Brazil, but then moving into Peru across the border, just a 15-minute walk, and then working with the churches that are there. And his trips last 8 days. 2 days of travel and then 6 days on the job. He basically works you 5 days, and then you take 1 day and he relaxes and takes you wherever you want to go to see the country. And it's basically a relaxing day before you head back home. 8 days, believe me, 8 days is about the max that you can take it. My first trip to Africa was 21 days. And I learned very quickly that was way too many days. Everybody was just about shot, spent. It was just too hard emotionally, too hard physically. And we'll talk about all of that here in a little bit. And so he's looking at October or November for that. And probably he's going to be taking another trip in Central America before that. I don't have any real time frame on that. I will keep you updated as that comes in. Him and I are going to work very close together. But that will be another opportunity. Once he saw what we have here, and I get it. I mean, I understand how guys like Miles have to operate. You pretty much go into churches, and you want them to support you. You want them to help you. But those guys out there are such idiots many times that you just got to jump through every little hoop that they throw up there, spiritually speaking. If you don't dress right, if you don't say the right things, you know, when he came here and he saw, you know, what we had. And I think before that, he was looking at like he looked at everything else. But he simply told me that he's never, in all the churches he goes to, he's never been to a church, never seen a church like this. And there's a reason for that, and I'm going to end tonight with that reason. But he wants us to be part of what he's doing. He needs us, but we definitely need him. He will do for me and for this church where we're at right now to get to the next level. And everybody doesn't have to go on a trip to gain that level. I want you to understand that. Not all of you will go, and all of you can go. I understand that. But all of us can be part of the team that actually, like that verse, you know, somebody goes down to the battle, the other stays by the stuff, but they part alike. And the excitement of what God is going to do with the people that go will come back and be infectious to the people that are here, and then just keep us moving. This thing is going to develop in time into so many different aspects of reaching people's lives, not only around the world, but in this country. Where do you see what God is doing in Boston? It's unbelievable. Just by one couple coming out and what you did for them. And I'd love to tell you tonight, but I'm not going to. So I'm going to, I get it into my sermon. If I told you tonight, then I have to rewrite a sermon and for Sunday. I don't want to do that. I'm too tired. But anyway, I'm just telling you. I am just telling you. There's going to be something for everybody. I don't want anybody out there saying, well, this is just for this group. No. If that's the way you feel, I understand that. But that's not what it's all about. And I want you to see and understand that. And you know what? We're going to help Miles all that we can. He's the first door that God opened up. And it's a door that everybody, we can really work easily and well. And it's a lot easier going there than it is going to Europe or going to Africa or some of the other places that, you know, that I have been. He's the man that God gave us to help us, as I said, as we help him. He's going to actually take this church and train you hands-on how the mission field really works. And we as a church need to prayerfully, look at this opportunity to take and send young men and young ladies, moms and dads, whoever, out of this church over the aspect of doing missions. And it will, nothing, Jim and I were talking about this as the week went on, Jim Lake, and he knows this to be true. And I'm telling you, nothing will change your life and give you a better perspective and a better dimension of what God has really called you to do than to see a third world country or another country and see God's people there. It'll give you a perspective that most American Christians do not have. And it's something that I want to make available to everybody. I'm not going to, I mean, obviously, if you're some idiot stick that you can't even come to church, you know, every other 6 months, I'm not interested. But there's something for everybody here that wants something. And it's one of those things that, right now God has opened this door of opportunity and this door of utterance for us. So we're going to prayerfully move through that. Now listen to me, what I'm about to say now, I want you to listen to me very carefully. I will not be going and leading any of these trips. I won't. My job will be to train you and to get you ready to go. This will be the ultimate training ground for leadership. For 40 years, I trained men and women to go across this world, and teaching those basic discipleship lessons have been translated in so many different languages. And we have used them around the world, not just around the country, but literally around the world. There was a time, and Terry knows this to be true, he was part of that with me back then. There was a time when we trained, what, 200 people, Terry, at least. We took them down to the Chiefs stadium parking lot. We worked them with calisthenics, worked them with get team concepts. We did everything that we could do to get to work them as teams. We put them in teams. There was captains of the teams. And we wanted to train them and give them everything that they needed, because the time came when literally there was one plane flying over to Europe and another plane crossing in the air coming back to the United States. We crisscrossed the Atlantic and the Pacific, and we sent teams all around this world. It raised some of the greatest leadership that you could ever want to have. And those that were part of that, you know, will remember that I built the teams around four basic concepts and drilled those concepts into them. And I want you to know it's going to be the same basic four concepts that I'm going to drill into you. These are going to become the absolute mandate for us that we work together as a team. Now, I hope I can figure this out. Barb wrote these on the thing for me, and I went, oh, here we go. Oh, yeah, it goes this way. All right. Almost. Wow, that was easy. Just broke my thumbnail, but other than that, everything is good today. Now, I want to talk to you about these four things here, if I can just do it this way. If you're going on a trip, and I think over the course of the next several years, most of you probably will, these four principles you will live by. The first one is adaptability. You're going into a foreign culture. You're going into a culture that many times you're going to be 8 hours ahead on your time. You're going to have a long plane ride. When we went to the Philippines, it was a 23-hour plane ride. You hit the ground. What once was you left on Tuesday, you think it's Wednesday, it's still Tuesday because you crossed the international date line. Everything is upside down. And you're going to have to be able to adapt to that. You can't have your little petty issues that you have here. The whole team can be let down by just one person. You're going to have the ability to adapt to the circumstances as they come. Your body is going to be pushed to different hours. You're going to have to eat different food. You're going to have to deal with a different culture. Your body is going to try to change and absorb everything, and you have to be able to adapt to it. You have to be able to, with any situation that you go into, especially in a foreign culture, things aren't going to go the way they're planned. When we went to Romania, we landed and we had to take a bus into Romania. When we got to the border for wherever we were crossing into Romania, that line was at least 4 miles long with cars that they weren't letting anybody across the border. We sat at that border for 12 hours. Finally, the bus driver got out of the line, weaved this big Greyhound bus up through everything to get up as close as he could to the border. We go in and tell them we want to get across the border. We got all these folks and all these people, and we got to get to where we're going into Romania. And they wanted to know about our visas. Well, we had gotten visas before we went. When we're now at the border, they're telling us that those visas are no good. Now, it's a scam to get money off of Americans. When we went to Africa one time, and this was Kenya, when the plane landed and all these African security guards and baggage handlers, they weren't going to give us our baggage till we tipped everybody, and I think it was everybody in Kenya. This is what they do. So we're here now, and now we're going to have to pay for more visas to get into the country. And so we get the thing and we pay it, and then they tell us they're still no good because we got to have a photograph of every person. Now, here we are. It's the middle of the night. We're in the border of Romania. Where in the world are we going to find a photo op that we can get pictures? Or we ain't going to get in. Adaptability. I looked over and I saw the bus driver had a Kodak camera. I said, you got any film in that? He said, yeah. He says, I use it to take pictures for my, and I says, how many pictures do you have in that? Well, he only had half enough of what I needed. So what did I do? Got two people, put them side by side, head to head, took a picture, cut the pictures in half, bang, bang, put it on the deal, and that's how we got in. You're going to face challenges just like that. Now, you can whine and go home, or you can say, oh, I wish, or you can adapt to what you got to do. A lot of this is like going back to the book of Acts. A lot of this is like you're going into another culture that doesn't operate the way your culture operates, and you have to adapt to it. The next one is flexibility. You got to be flexible. There's no room on a trip like this for people who are not flexible. It ain't going to go the way you think it's going to go. You're not going to get to eat when you think you probably are hungry and need to eat. One of the things about Latin people, when it comes to time, they're not time-orientated. They're event-orientated. If you tell them, we're going to have a party tonight at 6 o'clock at my house, they may not show up till 7:30 or 8. You know why? Because they're not time-orientated. Actually, most of you aren't either. But the bottom line is, they don't look at their watch and say, I got to be someplace at 6. They're thinking about the event. That will drive you crazy. But you've got to be flexible with it. I had another group that was in Romania somewhere, or maybe it was Hungary, I don't remember, but I know that they had finished their deal and they were able to going to leave and come home the next morning or the next day. When they got up that morning, they found out that there was a labor strike in the city that they were in. None of the buses were running, the cabs weren't running, nobody was running, and they had a 10-mile trip to the airport. We have trained them to be able to adapt to anything. They worked out. They ran. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. We got them ready for every scenario. My guy in charge, they all travel light, backpacks. They all loaded their backpacks, and they hiked the 10 miles to the airport and got on their plane and got home. You have to be flexible. You have to be flexible. The third one, compatibility. You have to be able to work with people as a team on your team. Now, you know what? This church is just like any other church. And you got people who don't like other people. You got some of you guys who talk and make fun of other guys. And some of you girls do the same thing. I'll tell you right now, you better look at the person next to you if you're going to go on a trip. Because you may have to put your life in that person's hands, and they may have to put their life into yours. You may find yourself in a situation where they're going to be there to help you. And all of this petty American stuff, well, I don't like him, or you know what's him? Yeah, he did this. It needs to stop if you're going to be part of this, because that's not going to fly when you get where all you have is each other. That's the way it should be now, but unfortunately in American Christianity it's not. But I'll tell you something, you go on a trip, you better come to the place where you realize that the person sitting next to you or in front of you, behind you, you're a team. And there's no place for your stupid, petty little, well, I don't like her, or I don't like him, or you know what, he's goofy, his ears are too big, or he's ugly, or this or that, or he didn't do this right. There is no room for that. Compatibility is the key. My teams that went, they were teams. We had worked them together for many, many months before they went. Nothing like what you're going to go through, but back then it was a big deal because I had so many, and we were going to countries all across the world. And they were in some bad situations sometimes. I had a group in El Salvador one time, and this when the war was still kind of going on. They were blowing up stuff around, And we had people down there, and I had, we were at the by the hospital or someplace, and I had some gals here that were waiting for the bus to come, our bus to come and pick them up. And there was some old drunk out there, and there were paramilitary soldiers everywhere. Everybody's got a machine gun, and everybody's guarding something. And this old drunk guy was saying something in Spanish, and obviously wasn't, how you doing today, and throwing rocks at him. Two military National Guard guys there. And, you know, and they're not paying attention, and he keeps saying stuff. He's obviously drunk. You can buy a bottle of Tic Tac down there, which will put you on your rear end quicker than anything else, for 25 cents. And this guy, he was Tic Tac, believe me. And he's throwing stuff at him and saying things. They're walking back and forth and talking and stopped a little bit. And he keeps throwing at them, and the guy took his rifle off and shot him right in front of those people. Welcome to Central America. If a man dies, gets hit with a car, if a man gets shot, he dies somewhere, the law is that they do not move the body. They leave the body by the side of the road till they're ready to come and pick up the body. So you'll be driving down there, you'll see a dead body here, dead body there, however they died. Welcome to Latin America. It's a whole different world. It's a whole different culture. And it's something that everybody has to be prepared for. And I'll prepare you, believe me. I'll get you ready to go. But you need to understand tonight, durability. Being able to work long hours, do what you got to do. Understanding, you know, that you're going to be in a situation where your body clock's going to be all messed up. Mine was I have the worst body clock on the planet. My first trip to Africa, I didn't sleep for 3 days. And then Gwen Cherry, one of the gals that some of you know, she was on that trip, and I woke up in the middle. I was up in the middle of the night, and she got up, and she said, "What's the matter, Bob?" And I said, and she said, "Well," she gave me a Valium. Slept like a baby. From that point on, I realized what my problem was, and I never went on a mission trip without a whole bottle full of sleeping pills, because that's the only way I could survive. And so you got to know your body. You got to know what you can do, what you can't do. But the bottom line is durability. Years ago, when we were preparing people to go, I tried to devise every plan that I could to mess with their minds. I wanted to get them out of an American mindset culture and get them prepared that things don't go the way, and you can't get an attitude about it when they don't. We built them out at the Chiefs training area. We ran them, pushed them, pushed up, calisthenics, leg ups, everything as teams. And it all came together for what we called and became to be lovingly called Hell Night. Hell Night was basically what the word means. We would load up 150, 200 people, backpacks, everything they needed to survive for the next 2-3 days. We'd drop, I had a buddy, in fact it was your dad, Tony, had that property out there by Grain Valley. And we'd drop them off 10 miles from that. People were driving down the road and they'd see these long chain of people with backpacks on, hiking together in a thing. Some of them were chanting cadences. Cop cars would come up, want to know where everything was all right. And we had a long line, and we got there. Every time we did it, I tried to give them something that would make them be adaptable, flexible, compatible, and see how durable they were. One time we went, I told everybody before we got on the bus, you get through the hiking thing, we're going to have steak and a baked potato night for dinner. They loved that. So they all hiked it all in, all lined up. All right, where's the steak and the potato? One frozen steak and one potato. Here. You figure out how to cook it, start the fire, and cook it and eat it. And they had to do that. it taught them to, you know, here again, they were thinking, what, Ruth Crisp was going to show up there with her big truck? They had to be adaptable. They had to be flexible. One time, I tried to mess with their minds as much as I could, because going to another culture will mess with your mind. So I told them, all right, we're hiking out here, and you guys bring your own lunches, whatever you want. Make it good, because it's going to be the last probably really good meal you get, because we're going to start passing out MRIs or MREs here, and that's what you're going to get for dinner for the next couple of days. So on lunch, you bring your own food. Well, you know how that works. I had guys there that went over to Zarda Barbecue and brought a whole slab of ribs. Some had big sandwiches made up. Other people, like, just brought peanut butter and jelly. It had all kinds of mixture of food. Everybody prepared their lunch based on what their last meal was going to be, and they probably thought about it all the way out. So I said, all right, line up. Everybody get your meal out that you brought for lunch. And they held it up. And I could smell the barbecue. I could see the peanut butter and jelly. I could see the people who just brought crackers and cheese. And I said, okay, give your lunch to the person to the left. And the guy that had a steak wound up with cheese and crackers. The guy that had barbecue wound up with a peanut butter sandwich, maybe with jelly on it. Mess with their minds. Because that's what's going to happen in a culture. It's going to mess with your mind. You got to be able to roll with the punches. You got to be able to adapt and be flexible to what's going to happen, especially in a third world country like Latin America someplace. It's all going to change. And you need to be ready to do that. You're not going to be able to quit and take a break when you want to. You're going to have to, I mean, I've worked through the construction crews, missionary, we've done it all. And it's a thing where, you know, this is where you have to be ready for the challenge. Now, our second aspect is going to be, and our second opportunity is going to be our missionary trips to England. When Becca first came here, and you heard her testimony, how God put us all together. It was a thing where her mom found us on the website and just went into the family and said, look what I found, da 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 da. We got then connected. I remember when she came over for the first time, we had talked basically, and she basically prayed that God would use her like where we're at right now. And it's been from the start, God made it clear to me to make an investment in her and her family. You know, her brother Adam comes over to camp, and we talked to, you talked, some of you talked to her mom, and she's got brothers and sisters too, right? And everything over there, you know? And the real joy for me was watching God develop her. Watching the very investment that this church put into her by doing the things that we did and giving her the things that she needed to get the job done. And I remember last year at camp, she had been there now 3 years with us, and last year at camp, we sat down and we talked about where God was gonna go with this. And she talked about the fact that, you know, there were churches over there that had young people in it but didn't really have a King James Bible, and she wanted to kind of go in as a missionary, build relationships, go to the church services, get with the people, and then find maybe the people there that she could disciple or teach the Bible to and help them grow. And I thought that was a great plan. That is biblical New Testament missions. That is what it's all about. And so at that point in time, I recognized what God was doing there. And so this year when she came over, she brought Grace and Ashley with her. Ashley got saved last night of the meetings. And my goal here has always been this: to be able to send a team into her hometown. Let these girls go back and work as a team. Find a group of little people out there, and your family included, that we can have a base and then send four or five people over for several days to hold some Bible studies, to do some fellowship things, to really be an encouragement not only to you, but our two girls here, Ashley and Grace, and their friends, and just very slowly just build that base over there, that we can help you do what God has called you to do, which you've done pretty much on your own, all by yourself, and you know, it's pretty amazing. And my goal here was to, but this will be a little different trip as in Central America. Every trip will be different. This one will be a little more complicated. This will be a different culture with a different mission plan and require a different approach. That's another thing I want you to understand, that no two mission trips wherever you do are going to be the same. It's got different culture with different people, and we're going to have to go with a different approach. And I'm praying that, we are paying for all three girls' trips this time, because I want them to understand that I don't want it just to be an investment in you, but I want it to be an investment into you two. We've grown to love you two girls, and you're part of us here. And my prayer is that God will take what you've learned here these couple of days and go back, and you three will form a team that will really be able to lay a baseline for us to come back over. And, you know, it's a thing where I'm really excited about it. Now, it may be a combination of things. This is where we don't know how it's going to go. It may be that when you go back and you get some people, we send a team over. Instead of another team over at the end of the year, a bunch of them come over to our camp. We'll do it that way. I don't know how it's going to work out exactly. I just know that God has opened the door. And when we see a baseline of people over there that we can go minister to, then that's what we're going to do. And we'll start with the doors that God has given us out this last couple of days. And in time, as God develops it, we'll have an opportunity with Mike Veach. And I haven't even talked to him, but he said to Jason, hey, you guys can come up and go with us. I know Mike told me when I was there for Mel's anniversary 8 or 9 years ago that we could bring people up there and go out on the street and their street ministry and be part of that. He's very open to that. He knows what we have here. And it's a thing where, you know, we want to be able to develop that and put it all together. And having said what I said, where do we go forward? Let me give you a couple of suggestions. First of all, I'd get your passport. That's not a bad thing to have. You go to the post office, you fill out an application, you have to have a form, two forms of identification. One of them has to be your birth certificate that proves you're an American citizen. The other one, probably your driver's license. You can get your picture taken there at most post offices. You put the money in and they send it to you and you get it back. I would suggest that if you have any ideas about doing that, that you get your passport. Second thing is, talk to me about what your feelings are about this. I'll help you. We'll sort through some things. We'll pray about, you know, what God wants to do with you and how He wants to get you ready. I know that already, you know, even before the conference was over, there were several of you coming up and saying, hey, do you have a list? I want to get on the list. I don't have a list, but we'll put a list together. I wanted to have this night first. I want you to understand where I'm coming from, where the church is coming from, and we will definitely have some other meetings about going so you can have a better understanding once we kind of get the thing more solidified. Now, I said this throughout the conference and before, and I said it already tonight. I don't expect everybody to go. That's not my goal here. But we all can be a part of the team that sends people out. And I would like when we get to that point, that we finally get a finalized team, whether it's to go to Peru or we get to go to England, I would, you know, to put a support team of prayer around that team that really helps. We don't have to worry about England so much, but when you go down to Latin America, you're going to be working through a translator. I will teach you how to speak through a translator. And some of you people, you say, well, I don't speak Spanish. You don't need to speak Spanish to help somebody learn how to translate. Translate is, the language is the easy part. It's your ability of what you say based on what the translator is going to say that you don't mess them up and you work in sync. When I was in Brazil, I had a pastor, a missionary down there that was from São Paulo, King James guy. Great guy, probably went home to be with the Lord now. And when I got to Brazil, he asked if he could translate for me. And, you know, you have to have kind of a bond with your translator. It's kind of like you're getting the same sync, you know. And this guy, it's almost like he knew what I was going to say before I was going to say it, and I knew what to say. It was just like, we were a match set. And I'll tell you, we could rock and roll in preaching through a translator. He just was with me that well. And it's a sensitivity to not the language, because you don't have to worry about that too much, but the person that's translating for you, that you don't throw them a curveball. And I'll show you how to do that. I'll tell you the do's and the don'ts of working with a translator. So you don't get in a mess with somebody, because it doesn't take much. And then again, when you start to think in a translation, when you're preaching through a translator, you can't think like an American anymore. You got to be really look at your crowd and realize that they don't understand some of the things that we say as Americans. I mean, you can't use the goofy little things that we talk about. Like, I told this guy, don't bug me, man, don't bug me. They don't get that. They bug me. You got bugs on me? You bug me. They don't see it. They don't get that. You got to talk to them directly without using all of the things that we as Americans think, you know. That person drives me nuts. They don't get that. That's not in their culture. So you have to be able to keep what you're saying straight to them, that the translator doesn't have to try to figure out, how am I going to say this in Spanish, that don't bug me. That you got to be able to be more direct with that. I'll show you how to do that. I'll get you completely, totally ready before you have to go. One of the other things I'm going to do now, and I haven't done this for years and years and years, I'm going to reinstitute a program that I did years ago. And it's a program called MARS Program. MARS. It was an acronym for a program that I put together years and years and years and years and years ago. MARS means missionaries are really special. And then I added to it, the MARS program is out of this world. I'm going to use it differently now than I used it back then. Back then, I had a Sunday school class that was probably 1,600 or 1,700 people. we were into world missions all over the place. I developed the Mars program to financially pay for and deal with missionaries. And what it was is I asked the people in my Sunday school class if they, above their regular giving, we can't just transfer one to the other, that doesn't do any good, but above their regular giving, if every week or every month or however they wanted to do it, they would designate something to the Mars program. And in time, that Mars program built up that we got to be able to do everything we wanted to do with for missionaries. Now let me be honest with you. Modern missions today is pretty much a joke. We don't support monthly missionaries. Most of them, it is a waste of time and money. They don't have a clue what they're doing. We will support missionaries like your daughter, who knows what they're doing, Bible believers. And I really enjoyed the clip you sent me of watching them on there. Thank you for doing that. They're a sweet couple and kids. But we support people like that. There are missionaries out there that I know personally that I will help. I'm not the kind of guy who will dribble out $50 a month for them, but I'll wait till they have a need or a project and then drop a couple thousand on them or $1,000 on them, and that's much more impacting to where their ministry is. But I'm not into this modern idea of missions. The modern idea of missions is so unbiblical, it's unbelievable. A kid will go to a missions college, a missionary college someplace, and they'll teach him that when he goes to the mission field that he never loses his American identity. So I've seen him in Mexico, and I've seen him in Germany, too. I've seen him come to the place where, you know, they make a little mission compound down in Mexico with American flag. They celebrate the American holidays. And it's pretty much, I'm an American missionary and you're a poor Mexican out here, but I'm going to win you to Christ. And it doesn't work that way. My model for missions is the Moravian missionaries. Count Zinzendorf in Germany back in the 1600s trained missionaries and then gave them a one-way ticket to wherever they wanted to go. One way, because don't come back. You go, be part of that culture, accept that culture, and live there as that culture. When I sent one of my boys to Australia, Kevin Bond, who's got a church down the road here now, he left America. He went to Australia, he took a job. He worked a job while he built the church. I know you can't always do that, but nobody even thinks about doing that. And it's a thing where, you know, here's my philosophy. God has opened the doors for us with Miles, and I'll always take care of Miles, and England, and I'm gonna take care of England, and we'll see where it goes from there. My Mars program, you giving over and above your regular giving and marketing on your envelope or marking it however you do it on your check, you know, $100 to the church, $50, $20 to Mars, that's going to go into a Mars fund. Up to this point in our church, we've only had just a general fund and everything we pay for that. We don't divide it up into anything. We just throw it all in one thing and then we deal it out from there. We're still going to do that for most things, but Mars is going to now, is going to be a separate identity. I'm going to use what comes in Mars to offset the trips of you going on the mission trips. In other words, I'm sending you out as our missionaries. I'm going to support you and the work going out as our missionaries because I know that we're going to build bases out there that in time, if the Lord gives us that time, that we're going to be able to see some of our own men and women go out to be missionaries out of this church. And the modern missionary mindset is the fact that you go, you get out of, and I must get four or five a month emails from young guys, and they're really nice guys. But they just got out of mission college someplace. And now they got to go around the country to every church they can, trying to get in to show them their work, and hopefully this church will support them. Some of them spend a year or 2 years before they ever get to the mission field. Some of them never get to the mission field. Once they get to the mission field, they're taught, you get there, you establish your work, you get going for a year, maybe a year and a half, and then you come back to the United States for a recouping and a rest for 6 or 7 or 8 months. How in the world do you build a church in just a year and then leave it and come back and it's still running? This is the mindset. I want nothing to do with that mindset. That is as far from the Bible as you could ever find. Paul is the model missionary in the Bible. And coming up at some point in time, I'm going to walk you through the modern missions philosophy based on Paul's life. But I'm going to tell you, our Mars program is going to be set aside out of our regular budget. We don't just shift it over and above. I'm not asking for anybody to do the sacrificial thing, though that was really good. You can do it if you want to. But in this case, we just want to be part of the Mars program, that when we send people out, we can offset the costs and send these people out as our missionaries that we have trained, that you understand missions. When you go on the teams, you learn it, you come back, you then will help me train the next teams going out. And then the next teams going out will be trained by that team. And pretty soon it'll spread through our whole church. And then God is really going to do some things. So I am just telling you, we just take our time. I wanted to lay it out for you tonight. And I wanted to show you that, our support for missions through Mars is going to be for our missionaries, our people here. Getting you grounded and trained. Getting this church to the next level. And then let the Holy Spirit of God deal in somebody's life. And I will tell you right now, if God ever raises up a young man or a young couple that you're going to the mission field, you will not have to go around kissing everybody's rear end to try to get some support. We'll have 3 or 4 or 5 churches that we're basing with right now that will obviously support you, but your support will come right here. You will be an extension of this church. You won't be out there someplace, but you'll get a one-way ticket. And you will go out there and you will invest your life. Some of the great missionaries that you've been reading about or could be reading about, that we have in books in there, you know what they did? When they went there, they left their American culture at home. They wore the clothes of the people that they were trying to reach. They embraced all of the things that they embraced. They left the fact that they were Americans. You guys like Dr. Livingston and Jonathan Goldfarb, they spent 50-plus years on the mission field and never went back. You know why? They bought it. When Livingston died, he's buried in Westminster Abbey over in England. But when he died in Africa, before they took his body back to England, the natives cut out his heart out of his body and buried that heart in the soil of Africa, because that's where his heart was. And that's the way it ought to be when God gets a hold of your heart. We got young people in Jared's group. Miles has taken down two of his boys who are not even much into the teens yet. Jared, you get 2 or 3 guys that are, or gals that are really on fire and they're up and mature enough to handle it, what a great opportunity to put them into our groups going down there and train them, learn, get them everything they need. And it's a thing where we want to be able to put this whole package together as we move forward. Move forward slowly. There's a lot to pray about. God has given us tremendous 2 doors of opportunity. I'm not getting up here and, and saying, everybody's going to do this, I'm going to do that. We are going to walk through this thing with the opportunities that God gave us. Right now, we have Miles and we have England. And for hard dates, we have sometime in October, November, to send a team down to Peru. We may have an opportunity before that. I'm sure we will. But you need to pray about what God wants you to do. I'd like to get a team up at some point as we get you guys get back and find out what you got going on over there and try to get over there and as a more of an exploratory to find out what we have, what we can do. And that's another whole form of a mission trip. I'll help you wherever I can. I'll get whoever wants to go ready to go. Now let me just say this to you in closing. Maybe this will help you better understand our church, the hand of God, me, and what we have here. Every preacher who comes through here, everybody who comes, the guys that just left, they all marvel at one great part about this church. That is the youth, young men and women in this church. When I say young, I'm talking 50 and below. 50 and over, you're pushing it. 70 and beyond, it's pushing you, believe me. They can't get past the young couples, the young singles, and everybody seemingly dialed in and loving the Word of God. I've heard it over and over again. Jim tells me about his boys' church there. In North Carolina, everybody's 60, 70, 80 years old. These guys come in and they say the average Baptist church out there is they can't get any young people. They can't reach young people. They're all in their 70s and their 80s and their 60s, and they're all old people. And they don't know how to reach them. This is why, with what we were faced in the last couple of days and where we're going, maybe you can see it now. Maybe you can better understand it. This is why God has given us the young men and the young ladies in this church, and the bulk of our church, 85 to 90%, are people that are 35, 40 and under. Your prime time to go to the world. You're young enough, strong enough to be able to still do it. I can't do it anymore. I gave it 40 years of my life, believe me. My family was sacrificed, my wife was sacrificed. I was gone around the world doing everything that God had me to do. And I look back on it now with the church that I have here, with the young men and women here. And for me, it's a crystal clear picture of why I learned everything I learned there, to now to take you guys and to teach you everything I know to get you ready, and you go do what I can't do anymore. That's why God gave us this church with so many young men and young ladies in it. And now that's why God has given us the opportunities that He's given us. Us older folks, we can pray for them. We can help them get ready. You can work at translators. All of you can be part of the Mars program. You can't go yourself, but we can send others to go, and we are part of that team. It all comes down to, and I saw this through the sacrificial giving, $180,000 in 2 months. This church can do anything it wants because God's got His hand on it. And your hearts are in the right place. I'm not asking for everybody to keep on giving sacrificially. You can if you want to, but that's not realistic. I'm just saying if everybody does something, if everybody has a part over and above your regular giving, if everybody commits after this last week and where your heart is and how you've been changed going forward, missionaries are really special. We'll take it out of this world. And I want to be able to send you young men and young ladies. And anybody that really wants to go, I want to be able to get you ready that you can have a piece of the action before the Lord comes back. So this is why God has given us the young church. God gave us the youth we have here that love the Word of God, and now He's given us the open opportunities to be able to do something with it. And I look at this as an ongoing training. I'm going to take the things that I've learned for 40 years. I'm going to train you to go, you're going to go to Central America or England, you're going to come back a different person. You're going to have a depth to you that you didn't have when you left. And then what I'm going to do with you is the next group that grows, you're going to help me train them. You're going to be the fresh eyes and the fresh minds to be able to show them and give them what they need to understand before they go. And it's going to be an ongoing pattern of us training each other, getting there, and then the Lord knows where he's going to take it. Mike does a tremendous lot of work in the Philippines. Wow. I've been to the Philippines. What a place that would be to go. Right now as we're here, I have never been there with Mike. But right now as we speak, there's 250 pastors that are using the material out of that bookstore. Miles took one of everything that we had in there and is going to take it back to his Christian school and to his friends and give it to them. The boys from Canton took everything out of the bookstore. John brought Sean back over yesterday and he cleaned us out some more. Rose came to me tonight. She says, can I put in another book order? We've got empty shelves. Absolutely. Now, you know what's going to happen with that? You see, this is the different dimensions of our ministry here. You make that possible. Your tithes and your offering gives us the ability to do that and give it away. Not only are we going to send teams out to impact, the very material without ever leaving this place is going to impact people all across this country and all around this world. I got my guy, just heard from his dad the other day. I got my guy in the unknown country, the unknown missionary. In a block country where you can go to prison and be executed for preaching the gospel. They're using discipleship 1, 2, and 3. He's basing his ministry off the patterns class that I'm teaching you. By the way, you know there's no pattern class this week. You've got enough on your cup. You don't need any more. We'll pick it up next month. We're all soaking. We got enough to handle right now. But this is what God is doing with his church. And it's because of me. It's because of you. I mean, you can have the best preacher in the world, but if the people in that church don't get a burden for what God is doing, it doesn't mean anything. It's you. It's you, and it's you folks out there on YouTube who faithfully support us. You can be part of the Mars program too and help us send the teams out. Maybe at some point you want to come and you want to be part of a team. This is where we're going. I don't have all the answers tonight. I know I just have a full heart of what God did over the last couple of days, and I know you do too. So as a church together, just like everything else, let's just walk through it slowly. Over the next couple of weeks or even whenever you feel like you want to, you know, God's called you to go to one of these teams, you let me know. We'll begin to put a team together. I'll keep you updated on the dates and we'll work everything from there. But this is what we prayed for. And I know. Sunday, I've already been asked a couple of people to do this. Sunday, I'm going to give you another dimension to this, and I'm going to take you to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and I'm going to show you past, present, and future, what it means, what it has meant for me, what it will mean for you in this church, and what in the future of casting your bread upon the waters and then finding it after many days. I'm going to break that whole 7 verses down, and you're going to leave with a whole different perspective of what God is going to do with this church, you, and the word of God that God has given us. Now, tonight, as soon as we're done here in just a moment, there is an ice cream social downstairs to visit with the kids. And why don't you take the kids down now and get them down there settled. And we'll be down here in just a moment. Tomorrow, anybody that wants to go to brunch with us, with them, anybody that wants to go to brunch with them, we're going to meet at First Watch there in Lee Summit at 11 o'clock. Tomorrow night, this will be your last time with them tomorrow night because they leave Saturday. Tomorrow night, I got the addresses over here at 6 o'clock at the event sports park. It's a huge complex. They have basketball, they have laser tag, they have bowling, they have ice skating, they have video games. You can buy whatever you want for your family and do whatever you want to do. Or if you just want to come and hang out with the fellowship, you can be part of that. But that'll be the last night that we're together with them. And then the other thing is, they're calling for some bad snow on Sunday. How many guys here did you come to me and you're going to be on my snow crew? Are you here tonight? Some of you? Any of you?